Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next two half-hour segments, we're going to revisit a topic that I've dealt with in the past, namely the Third Reich's connections to the occult, and beyond that, some connections between neo-Nazism, or so-called neo-Nazism, and aspects of the New Age and the occult. We're also going to be taking a look at some aspects of the history of the Third Reich and why it has been able to survive into the present time. In the interests of time, because we do have a lot of material to cover, I'm going to get right into the subject material. We're going to be talking for the next 2.5 hours about a woman named Savitri Devi. Her name is spelled capital S-A-V-I-T-R-I, last name capital D-E-V-I. Although of European birth, she was something of an Indianophile, to coin a term. She was very much taken with India, which she saw as a prototype of, quote, Aryan, unquote, civilization, and she became wooed to the Nazi cause. Her biography was authored by Nicholas Goodrick Clark, last name capital G-O-O-D-R-I-C-K hyphen C capital C-L-A-R-K-E. And Nicholas Goodrick Clark has written a very important book called Hitler's Priestess, Savitri Devi, the Hindu-Aryan Myth and Neo-Nazism. The book was published in hardcover by New York University Press, copyright 1998. The ISBN number is 0-8147-3110-4. We're going to begin by taking a look at some material from a publication a publication that is issued by Samizdat Publishers. That's capital S-A-M-I-S-D-A-T. That's a Nazi publishing house that is run by a fellow named Ernst Zundel, a German expatriate who lives in Canada, last name capital Z-U-Umlaut-N-D-E-L. Zundel is one of the most prolific of the new Nazi publishers, and in 1982 he helped to publicize the activities of Savitri Devi in his Samizdat publication. Turning to Hitler's Priestess by Nicholas Goodrick Clark, we read, in late 1982, Ernst Zundel, the founder-proprietor of the neo-Nazi Samizdat Publishers in Toronto, publicized the availability of a set of 5 2-hour cassettes of live interviews with Savitri Devi and a brand-new edition of her out-of-print classic, The Lightning and the Sun, published in 1958. The notice was mailed worldwide on card flyers, and it is worth quoting in its breathless entirety. And here is the quote. The Hitler cult revealed. Discovered alive in India. Hitler's guru. For serious students of the occult. You can now purchase the complete set of tape cassette recorded live interviews with Hitler guru Savitri Devi at her home in India. Here, in her own words, the narration of a prophetic pilgrimage along the edge of the cosmic abyss. Watch the clouds of evil scatter under the lightning of cosmic justice and the sun of cosmic truth. Read her shocking and most recently published manuscript, The Lightning in the Sun, which exposes the tangled roots of Nazism for all to see. Discover through her the secret Nazi pyramid connection with Pharaoh Akhenaten and the ancient cult of the sun. Learn the real significance of Genghis Khan's evil role in history, his incredible significance in the present. Discover the hidden springs of Hitler's manic will to power, his mystical bond with the dark forces of time and destiny. Pursue the outlines of evil in its awesome cosmic context. Decipher now the encoded workings of the Nazi mind. Perceive how Hitler saw the workings of the universe through human sacrifice, vegetarianism, Aryanism, the cyclic view of history, the children of violence, the will to survive and to conquer, the seed of truth, gods on earth, Kalki the Avenger. Were ancient Sanskrit laws of the universe compiled in the Bhagavad Gita the secret source of Nazi strength? The amazing answers to these riddles are now at hand. Read them in The Lightning and the Sun, Hitler guru Savitri Devi's huge illustrated 448-page illumination of occult Nazi wisdom and prophecy. The Samizdat publicity was a resounding finale to a long and eventful life begun early in the century in the beautiful old wall city of Lyon in France. And skipping down, Samizdat's presentation of Savitri Devi was evidently part of this strategy designed to entice new audiences with the neo-Nazi message. Ancient mythology and pyramid secrets, Eastern religion, vegetarianism, and green ideas, the very currency of the burgeoning New Age with its interest in exotic religion, spiritual truths, and a worship of nature, could be exploited as bait for the young, unwary, or simply curious. By the late 1970s, the historical experience of the Third Reich was quickly receding into the past. As popular literature and films ably demonstrated, Nazism was becoming something mythical, even fantastic and also plastic, that could be molded and combined with novel associations and thereby given new meanings. By republishing the work of Savitri Devi, Zundel aimed to create a new cultic interest in Hitler, linking him to ancient mysteries, the world of nature, and powerful religious symbols drawn from the Orient. Her ideas have since built unlikely bridges between neo-Nazism and the New Age. Savitri Devi viewed nature in the Hindu fashion as a violent pageant of creation and destruction in which man held no special rights. A cloyingly sentimental love of animals stood in marked contrast to her misanthropic contempt for non-Aryan humans, the weak, and the infirm. Himmler and Rosenberg, among other leading Nazis, also combined a concern for animals with their monstrous blueprints to eliminate all, quote, unworthy, unquote, human life. The Impeachment of Man, 1959, her book devoted to a thoroughgoing rejection of the man-centered creeds of Judaism and Christianity, was republished by the far-right Noontide Press in America in 1991, interrupting that is the publishing arm of the Nazi Liberty Lobby organization. Its best-known publication is the Spotlight newspaper, not to be confused with the British Searchlight. Similar name, the British Searchlight, however, is anti-fascist. Continuing. Here, the brutality of social Darwinism meets both the green cult of nature and the antisocial excesses of animal rights activists. Again, the amoral worship of beauty and force implicit in Nazi thinking finds new alliances with Hinduism, the cult of Shiva, and deep ecology, that radical current of ecological thought that condemns modern man as the scourge of nature. Savitri Devi was a French woman of Greek-English birth who had become an admirer of German National Socialism in the late 1920s and was obsessed by the Aryan myth. Deeply impressed by its racial heritage and caste system, she had emigrated to India in the early 1930s to acquaint herself at first hand with what she regarded as the cradle of the Aryan race. There, she spent the years of the Third Reich and the Second World War in expectation of a global Axis victory, after which she and her Brahmin husband expected to help in the establishment of a racial new order in the subcontinent. During these years, Savitri Devi elaborated an extraordinary synthesis of Hindu religion and Nordic racial ideology involving the polar origin of the Aryans, the cycle of the ages, and the incarnation of the last avatar of Vishnu in Adolf Hitler. She regarded the Third Reich as, quote, the holy land of the West, the stronghold of regenerate Aryandom, unquote. Her ideas were actually representative of a certain section of high-caste Brahmin Indian society that hated the Raj and was impressed by Hitler's dramatic challenge of British imperial power. Such Indians were fascinated by the Nazi swastika, a holy Indian symbol, and fondly recalled the German tradition of Sanskrit scholarship since the early 19th century. However, it seemed unlikely that these ideas, so foreign to the actuality of National Socialism, could ever find supporters in the West. The situation changed with the total defeat and collapse of the Third Reich in 1945. In its wake, Savitri Devi pursued a long and busy career as a neo-Nazi apologist and ideologue in Europe. She was arrested by the British occupational forces in Germany for Nazi propaganda activities and imprisoned. Her extravagant Hitler cult, her Hindu Nordicist doctrine of the Aryan race, and unswerving loyalty to the Nazi cause found numerous devotees among her fellow prisoners and demoralized Germans. After her release, she befriended leading personalities of the Nazi regime, such as the air ace Hans-Ulrich Rudel and the commando leader Otto Skorzeny, who both played an active role in maintaining a global Nazi support network. She met with Nazi emigre and fugitives in Spain, Egypt, and the Middle East. She wrote books hymning the Third Reich and National Socialism, accounts of her propaganda campaign and detention, and a highly charged emotional memoir of her, quote, pilgrimage, unquote, to Hitler shrines and other places of Nazi association in Austria and Germany during the 1950s. Savitri Devi, a foreigner who had not even directly experienced life under National Socialism, supplied a new religious cult for the vanished Führer and an international rationale for Nazi-Aryan ideology that effectively transcended the narrow realities of German nationalism and anti-Semitism in the Third Reich. Defeated and humiliated Germans who could neither grasp the disgrace of their country nor accept the vilification of an idealized leader found comfort in Savitri Devi's rapturous approval. Hardened practitioners of Nazi terror and persecution were flattered by her doctrine of universal Aryan mission. The prosaic and gruesome aspects of Nazi practice during the years of tyranny yielded before a mythological tableau in which Hitler was deified and his regime invested with new religious significance. Nor was her appeal confined to diehard German Nazis and survivors of the Third Reich. The existence of small but persistent neo-fascist and neo-Nazi movements after 1945 in Europe, the United States, and South America is a well-documented fact. While these tiny groups and parties continue to peddle racism, anti-Semitism, and appeals for an authoritarian state, the universal post-war condemnation of Hitler and National Socialism is a major obstacle to their ever-gaining popular acceptance. The extermination of European Jewry has become the horrific hallmark of the Third Reich, forever tainting any attempts to rehabilitate National Socialist ideology. By her outright inversion of this accepted moral scheme, Savitri Devi became a heroine of the neo-Nazi scene. In emotionally laden prose, she transformed the negative attributes of Nazism into a religious cult of cosmic significance. The Third Reich was presented as a rehearsal for the Aryan paradise, and Adolf Hitler was celebrated as an avatar, a supernatural figure whose intervention in the cycle of the ages was essential to the restoration of the Golden Age. What we're going to do now is to take a look at some of the historical background which led Savitri Devi to form something of an ideological bridge between India and Nazism, and in particular some of the occult mythology of Nazism. One of the elements which led the Third Reich, which enabled the Third Reich, I should say, to gain significant inroads among third world populations was the fact that many of these populations lived in countries that were colonies of either France and or Great Britain. Such was obviously the case with India up until the end of World War II. India was, of course, a British colony, and that was greatly resented by the Indians, who looked to the Nazis and to the former Soviet Union as well as anti-imperialist opposition to Great Britain. I'm going to concern myself here only with the Nazi influence in India, because the Soviet Union, of course, no longer exists. Of Nazi influence in India, and bear in mind that the anti-British and anti-colonial aspect here was what the Nazis exploited, as well as gaining political currency from the swastika symbol, Nicholas Goodrich Clark writes as follows. It was with amazement and joy that Savitri Devi first observed pictures of the Führer on the household altar of Indian families. When she asked Srimat Swami Satyananda, the president of the Hindu mission in Calcutta, if she might make reference to Hitler and Mein Kampf in her official lectures, he replied that Hitler was for them an incarnation of Vishnu, the god who keeps things from rushing to destruction, who keeps things back, and goes against time. She was welcome to say what she liked in her lectures, provided that she said it from a Hindu point of view. Satyananda repeated this view of Hitler in 1942, adding that they needed National Socialism in India. She encountered similar pro-Hitler attitudes among many other educated Brahmins beside Asit Krishna Mukherjee and even among illiterate Sudras. Satyananda's reference to Hitler as an, quote, incarnation of God, unquote, and the, quote, savior of the world, unquote, were in fact commonplace among high-caste Hindus. Writing of his impressions of university life in India during the 1950s, Agananda Bharati declared that the active Hindu loves all dictators due to incurable hero worship. This he attributed to the avatar idea, that in every powerful man there is some cosmic power that manifested itself in the god-kings and heroes of the epics and mythology. But Hitler was especially popular, particularly with the aggressive nationalists, for he trounced the British in the early years of the war. Also, Hitler proclaimed the superiority of the Aryan, which is how the Hindu sees himself. Last, the memory of Max Müller's Aryan researches was still fresh. Hitler was the leader of the Sanskrit-knowing Germans. Bharati was exceptionally well placed to observe this sympathy. Born Leopold Fischer in 1923, he spent his youth in Vienna and embarked early on the scholarly study of India. During the war, he was a member of Subhas Chandra Bose's Indian Legion, serving mainly in France and Germany. Embracing Hinduism, he became a monk in the Dashanami order, originally founded by Sankara in 800, and pursued an academic career at Banaras Hindu University after the war. He has also written on Gorwarkar's Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, or RSS, and Hindu fascism. Subhas Chandra Bose, by the way, is somebody we dealt with in RFA program number 7. He was a Hindu nationalist who turned to fascism because he saw the Third Reich and Imperial Japan as India's liberators. And as seen here, he actually put together a fighting group that was composed of Indian prisoners of war who had been captured from the British Army and then turned to the Nazi cause. And in addition, the RSS, which had its genesis as an anti-British and Indian nationalist group, eventually metamorphosed into an Indian fascist group. Before turning to the subject of the Indian Legion of Subhas Chandra Bose, actually an Indian component in the Nazi military, we're going to take a look at former Indian Prime Minister Nehru's assessment of the RSS and its role as the leading Indian fascist organization. Turning once again to Hitler's Priestess by Nicholas Goodrich Clark, we read, Nehru and other commentators have seen the RSS as an Indian version of fascism. By the late 1930s, the Hindu nationalists were taking note of European fascism. Savarkar approved the German occupation of the Sudetenland on the grounds of common blood, and the Nazi Party paper, the Focusher Beobachter, carried a feature on him. When Madhav Sadishav Gorwarkar, shortly to succeed Hejiwar as RSS leader, published his book We or Our Nationhood Defined in 1939, the RSS message of ethnic nationalism was unequivocal. Gorwarkar rejected Congress's liberal concept of nationhood and quoted Blunchli at length. The Anschluss of Austria and the annexation of the Sudetenland were, quote, logical, unquote, conforming with, quote, the true nation concept, unquote. Race was the most important ingredient of nationality for Gorwarkar, who was deeply impressed by Hitler's ideology. And in addition to the RSS Indian fascist organization, there was, as we mentioned, an actual Indian Legion recruited from among Indian prisoners of war captured from the British Army that fought with the Nazis. Nicholas Goodrich Clark describes this in Hitler's Priestess as follows. By early 1942, the Wehrmacht had begun training Indian POWs at two camps in Germany. These trainees for an Indian Legion were drawn from POWs originally captured by the Italians in North Africa and eventually numbered some 3,000. Bose's recruiting speech included the words, quote, Hitler is your friend, a friend of the Aryans, and you will march to India as your motherland's liberators, unquote. An oath of loyalty to Adolf Hitler with reference to Subhas Chandra Bose was established, and the title Netaji, leader, was adopted for Bose. The Indian Legionnaires wore German uniforms with eagle and swastika badges in which they recognized their own religious symbol. The German High Command anticipated that the Indian Legion would be used for commando-type operations in the Middle East and eventually in Afghanistan and in the northwest frontier province of India. I would note that eventually Subhas Chandra Bose became somewhat disillusioned with the Indian attitude, with the Nazi attitude towards Indians, when he saw the very shoddy treatment that the Indians received in Germany proper, where they were looked upon as subhumans because of their dark skin. I would note, too, as we're about to see, the appeal of Nazism for people in the Middle East, Arabs in particular, also had its origins in anti-colonialism, because many of the territories in the Middle East were also British colonies, and for a time at least, and even on up into the present period, many Arabs had to have an affinity with Nazism, going back to this anti-colonial period. Obviously, anti-Israeli sentiment and anti-Nazi anti-Semitism has also formed a common bond. In RFA 22 and in the two-part miscellaneous archive series about the fascist third position, we took a look at Haji Amin al-Husseini, the self-proclaimed Grand Mufti of Jerusalem and the first leader of the Palestinian National Movement, himself, like Subhas Chandra Bose, a key Nazi spy, And we should note that Haj Amin al-Husseini was actually a major in the SS and recruited several Muslim Waffen-SS divisions for the Nazis. And also we should note that just as the Nazis themselves were actively contemptuous of the Indians, Hitler himself actually referred to the Arabs as, quote, lacquered half-apes who ought to be whipped, unquote. This, at least for a time, did not deter the Arabs from their pro-Nazi sentiments. The Arab-Nazi connection, and in particular the Egyptian-Nazi connection, is something we dealt with in RFA program number 22, and its origins in anti-British, anti-colonial sentiment are described by Nicholas Goodrich Clark as follows in the book Hitler's Priestess. The emergence of the Middle East as a haven for old Nazis during the 1950s had its roots in the anti-British and pro-Axis attitudes of Vichy Syria, Rashid Ali in Iraq, Mohammed Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, and even King Farouk of Egypt during the war. United by a common hatred of Jewry, the Third Reich had taken the Palestinian Mufti under its protection following the Allied invasion of Iraq, and he had lived throughout the year in a luxurious suite at the Hotel Adlon in Berlin. Hitler had enjoyed quite a following among the nationalist youth of Egypt during the war, after Nasiri Nasser, the later president's brother, had published an Arab edition of Mein Kampf in 1939, describing its author as, quote, the strongest man of Europe, unquote. Even after the defeat of the Third Reich, Arab feelings remained very warm toward the Germans, who were still regarded as potential allies against British colonial power in the region. Egypt became a favored destination for old Nazis in search of responsible jobs and high office. King Farouk had been impressed by his palace garage mechanics recruited from Africa Corps POWs and wondered what he might achieve with officers from the elite units of the Gestapo and SS who had fought so hard against the hated British. A number of Nazi experts who had escaped the Allied dragnet were hired by the king as military, financial, and technical advisors. This Nazi influence in Egypt was to survive its royal patron, for the young Egyptian officers who planned the military coup d'etat that ousted King Farouk in January of 1952 were themselves great admirers of the Germans and availed themselves of further large-scale imports of ex-Nazi expertise. Note, please, that later that Gamal Abdel Nasser's brother, Nasiri Nasser, published the Arab edition of Mein Kampf. I would note in passing that both Nasser and his successor, Anwar Sadat, had been German spies in World War II. One can annotate that from Ladislaus Farrago's best-selling book, The Game of the Foxes. What we're going to look at next is Savitri Devi's connections with two of the guiding lights of post-World War II Nazi activism, both of them key functionaries in what I have termed the Underground Reich, literally a Third Reich gone underground. The first of these is Luftwaffe pilot Hans Ulrich Rudel, who was one of the most decorated of the Third Reich's war heroes. He became one of the principal leaders of the post-World War II Nazi underground, and he had very strong connections with Savitri Devi. Turning once again to Hitler's Priestess, we read, after her return to Germany in 1953, Savitri Devi made numerous contacts in this revanchist and nostalgic milieu of Nazi diehards. Foremost among these was Colonel Hans Ulrich Rudel, whom she frequently visited at Hanover and came to know well. More about the Rudel-Savitri Devi connection. When Savitri Devi first met Hans Ulrich Rudel, he was already perhaps the most popular and visible figure of the neo-Nazi scene in the young German Republic. His contacts among old Nazis in South America were extensive, and he was a key player in the Nazi clandestine groups in Spain and Egypt. Although an activist by nature, Rudel could not help but be impressed by Savitri Devi's praise of Nazism as an international racist movement, a notion well suited to the clandestine and dispersed nature of post-war Nazi conspiracy. She met him several times at Hanover, completing her manuscript of The Lightning of the Sun on the occasion of a visit in March of 1956. By the way, in RFA program 22, we took a look at the massive, actually in RFA programs 4 and 22, we took a look at the massive Nazi presence in Egypt. One can access that information from those particular archive shows. of Savitri Devi's connections to Otto Skorzeny, the Nazi commando leader, SS officer, again, one of the most decorated of the Third Reich military functionaries, and beyond that, and even more importantly, the main post-war leader of the Odessa SS underground, and also a key functionary of the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi spy outfit, which jumped to the CIA at the end of World War II. Turning once again to Hitler's priestess, after docking at the great French port, through which she had so often passed en route to Greece, India, and Egypt, she traveled directly into Spain. Once again, Hans Ulrich Rudel had secured her a top-level introduction into the neo-Nazi network by sending her books Gold in the Furnace and The Lightning in the Sun to his colleague Otto Skorzeny in Madrid. Of the Skorzeny-Savitri Devi connection, we read, Skorzeny regarded Savitri Devi as an exceptional ideologist on behalf of a revived Nazi international and invited her to visit him in Madrid on her return to Europe. They evidently found plenty to discuss, for she remained his guest for 6 weeks. Skorzeny was convinced that conditions were growing more favorable for a fresh wave of neo-fascist sympathy in Europe. The loss of the Congo had unleashed revanchist sentiments in Belgium, and now, in late 1960, French extremists were seeking to delay any settlement of the conflict in Algeria. There was a widespread hope among neo-fascists that the Algerian issue would repeat the ideological conflict of the Spanish Civil War on a European stage. The fascist organization Jeune Europe supported the Organisation Armée Secrète, or OAS, in Algeria, and later found safe hideouts for its leaders. The increased levels of colored immigration in Great Britain were leading to a racial backlash and further support for far-right groups. New German neo-Nazi groups and youth movements were being established, including the Bund, Vaterlandische Jugend, and, I'm not even going to try this next name, sponsored by Skorzeny's friend, Karlheinz Priester. Skorzeny had read Savitri Devi's books and was impressed by their praise of German virtues in the general context of a revival of the white Aryan world. He felt she was someone to be encouraged, someone who should write more for the Nazi International. And we're going to take a look at Savitri Devi's connections to contemporary Nazi activists in the 1960s and up, and also some of the philosophical connections between Nazism and some aspects, again, note some aspects of the New Age, in the next half-hour segment. I've alluded to some of the archive shows. Those and the other tapes that I've done over the years are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, Spitfire. It's located at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, zip code 95005. Email spitfire@ix.netcom.com. There's a list and description of the various programs available from Spitfire on the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com, which is equipped with real audio. People can email me at my home base station in the South San Francisco Bay Area at demory@kfjc.org. Okay? demory@kfjc.org. That concludes this broadcast. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.